Leadership shouldn't be about who speaks the loudest, but rather who speaks the truest. I'm Charlotte Otter. Welcome to Speech Bubbles, the podcast that's rewriting the rulebook on leadership, communication, and success. In every episode, we're bursting the bubbles of traditional leadership, bringing you raw, real conversations with trailblazers who don't just challenge the status quo, they obliterate it. We're talking to heads of communication who know the power of words, HR mavericks reshaping workplace culture, and leaders from backgrounds that have been silenced for far too long. This is where vulnerability meets strategy, where authenticity beats artifice, where diverse voices don't just speak, they roar. Whether you're climbing the corporate ladder or building your own, Speech Bubbles is your roadmap to leadership that's human, powerful, and unapologetically you. Are you ready to transform how you communicate, lead, and succeed? Then let's burst some bubbles. My guest today is Roger Christie. Roger is the founder and principal of a reputation advisory firm called Propel, which he runs with his wife Gemma, and host of the podcast Your Digital Reputation. For over 15 years, he has partnered with thousands of senior executives across public, private, and NGO sectors, embedding behavior-led strategies and systems that help leaders earn trust in the digital age. Roger is also a sought-after keynote speaker and an advisory board member. Roger says, "Your reputation is only as valuable as the impact it allows you to have. It's far more than what people say about you when you're not in the room. It should be the very thing that opens the door, earns you a seat at the table, and gives you a voice in the discussion." Roger Christie, welcome to Speech Bubbles.
Thanks for having me on, Charlotte. I'm really looking forward to this chat.
Well, it feels like an honor because you're my first ever Australian guest, so that's pretty exciting. And I'm looking forward to a discussion about reputation because we are both reputation experts. So I'm looking forward very much to digging deep today. So let's talk about how reputation creates impact. How does it actively change how people both think about us and act in relation to us?
It's a great question, and a question that I think has evolved over the past decade in particular, as we've seen this maybe shift or evolution, along with the shift and evolution we've seen in analog and digital channels. We've seen the shift and evolution in this idea of reputation. And so for me, certainly in recent times, the importance of reputation and just as leaders globally, understanding what that looks like today and the dynamics that shape or influence that is critical. Because as you said in that quote, and I remember those words and I wholeheartedly believe them. This isn't about your physical reputation any longer. It's not about having great relationships with people within your geography or your jurisdiction or people that are at arm's length. It's very much about how you show up and turn up online. Because whether people know you physically or not, they know you in person or not, your reputation now is shaped by It can even be shaped, Charlotte, by people who don't even know you or have never met you, but just share their views and attitudes online, and they may not be accurate. But these things, these digital artifacts, these digital breadcrumbs are the pieces of information that people are using today to make decisions about whether they like us, whether they don't like us, whether they want to work with us or not, and whether they should trust us or not. And so reputation in the digital age is, from my perspective, a whole lot more exciting and compelling. But it's also a lot more complicated for leaders.
It is a lot more complicated and it takes quite a lot of work. And I know that you spend a lot of time and the main thrust of your business is training leaders on how to show up online. How do you take them from that attitude of, oh, LinkedIn is just superficial self-promotion to LinkedIn can actually mean the commercial success of your business?
Yeah, great question. And a very common sentiment from people who, even if they don't necessarily use LinkedIn terribly often themselves, if they're not terribly familiar with it, if they've been forced or maybe their arms twisted behind their backs to get on there and be more active, the reality is today that it's actually not about LinkedIn. It's not about any specific platform. And I think that's a really important point to call out very early in our chat because LinkedIn is really just a platform. Like other social media or digital platforms that will come and go, it's not about that. It's not about knowing or being better at LinkedIn. It's about recognizing the impact that has, as you said, on reputation today. So why is LinkedIn so important is perhaps a good starting point for leaders. Well, it really matters because, I mean, one, it's owned by Microsoft and, you know, is worth a few billion dollars and is something that has a lot of users, audiences across the globe. In our market, it's around 90% of the tertiary educated and professional workers in this country, in Australia. So it's a significant audience and certainly a significant professional audience that uses the platform. Given its size and its prominence, it also ranks very highly in search. So whether someone's running a quick Google search, they're saying, well, who's Charlotte Otter? Or whether it's someone who might be running something through ChatGPT, these, you know, search engines and generative AI tools, they're gathering information from sources online. And if LinkedIn is seen as one with high domain authority and a relevant, credible source, then this is a place that these tools are going to go. And this is therefore influencing and shaping perceptions about leaders. So why does LinkedIn matter? Doesn't really, except for the fact that it is a key gateway between people who are looking to learn more about you and your capacity to control that and influence what they see.
I love that you say that, and it makes me think that all these tools that we have at our disposal, all these online tools, what we're doing when we use them is we're creating a digital network of points where people can access or find information about us. And I love that idea that we're not obsessing about one platform, but that we're creating all these different points of access, and that's really opened up my mind the way that you talk about that. I'd love to get one example. Tell us about a leader who you took from A to B, who really learned about living their reputation out loud online.
Yes, one example that comes to mind, and there are so many, and I think that's important to call out too, is that everyone has their own experience with their comfort levels, their confidence levels, their capability levels online. So every leader comes to this environment with a different perspective and perhaps, you know, different legacy experiences or hang-ups or advice or guidance or frustrations, whatever it is. And so the example that I'll talk to, and the reason I think it's so relevant, is that this was a leader who I'd known and worked with in an offline capacity, if you can call it that, for some time. So as the CEO of a business, he'd kind of drifted around the work that we were doing, but wasn't directly involved. And what was interesting about when he did suddenly become directly involved, someone I would describe as incredibly capable, incredibly bright and credentialed and trusted and respected by industry peers, but someone who individually or personally perhaps didn't see themselves as having an awful lot to contribute in the online world. You know, the old LinkedIn post, what would I say? What would give value to people? And so what was interesting about him and the journey we went on, rather than trying to force feed content and for LinkedIn, and rather than trying to encourage him to do things that he felt uncomfortable with initially, the starting point was actually working out what was he trying to achieve. So what would be the purpose of doing anything online? And what sort of goals could he accomplish by being more active and more visible? Then the next question, and this relates to his key stakeholder groups, well, who matters to you? Who are the most important audiences in your world? And then finally, the third component here, what are you passionate about? What are the things that fire you up and get you excited? The things that get you out of bed in the morning? Ideally, the things that mean you're in the role you're in and doing the work you do. And so by actually not forcing LinkedIn onto this particular leader or any leader, the starting point was more about his goals, his audiences, and his passions. Instead, we had a fabulous conversation about the people in industry and particularly globally who he knew and trusted and would love to hear more from. And so as I'm talking to him and also talking to, my client and the communications colleagues within that business, what was really interesting was we weren't forcing him at the start to go and post things. We're actually just encouraging him to listen and see what value he could get by identifying those key people based on his goals and just sitting, almost like pulling up a chair to the digital room and seeing what people were saying, just observing, immersing himself in their conversations. And sure enough, a couple of weeks later when we caught up again, he said, gee, I didn't know people were sharing this sort of information online. I didn't realize, one, the conversations that were being started, and two, the comments and the conversations between known, trusted, credible people that he really regarded highly. And so essentially he was drawn into LinkedIn because he simply wanted to observe and understand what they were saying, these key stakeholders. And then by listening, he felt compelled to comment and share his own views, which is natural because he did have a lot to offer. He just needed to find that and particularly build confidence in the online space. And then sure enough, finally, the third step is he wanted to break down a lot of the infrastructure and the scaffolding that had been set up around him as CEO to post support posts, starting ideas, even ghostwritten copy for him to just go yes and then sign off and approve and send on its way. He wanted to break all that down because he felt like it was too slow and cumbersome. And so by listening to start, he then felt compelled to comment. And by commenting, he felt, I've got more to say. And he felt compelled to post. And all of a sudden, you've got someone who may have seen themselves as an introvert at the start, selling themselves on why this medium would be so important based on his business goals, his key audiences, and the things that he was most passionate about.
Such a great story. And I love that focus on listening, because I think that what some leaders get wrong is this idea that the social media platforms are about broadcast and I must get my messages right and I must have the perfect story and my comms team must craft those messages. And really, the listening aspect is so powerful. And what I say to my clients is spend some time following the people who are interesting to you, listen to what they're saying, start to comment and join in the conversation. And if you find yourself writing a comment that's five lines long because you're so passionate, take a note, because that's a post for you. That's something that you clearly feel really strongly about. And that power of listening to unlock your interests is so valuable.
I completely agree. And you can have someone who you could argue, you could fight, you could kick and scream until you're blue in the face, trying to get a particular individual to pick up the digital pen, so to speak, start writing on their keyboard and contribute online. It can be such a painful and frustrating and worthless experience. As you rightly say, tap into the thing that person cares about and try and hold them back. Try and hold them back when they're surrounded by relevant, valuable conversations of people that they know and trust, or people that they would love to get to know and trust. It's simply that we've been putting the wrong use case in front of leaders, as you say, around LinkedIn being a broadcast medium. And broadly speaking, social media being broadcast media. It's social first, media second. We've got to remember that in all our social interactions, it's really about listening, about understanding, about relating and conversing, and then, yes, adding your opinion when you've got something to say. But you've got to know who you're talking to, and you've got to know what their expectations are and what their preferences are and what their pain points or gaps and frustrations are. So we've got to listen first. All good communication starts by listening first. So I completely agree with you. I don't know, you know, exactly where this problem started, Charlotte, but certainly along the journey, people have been told the wrong thing about LinkedIn, particularly as leaders, that you need to use it as a broadcast medium and people will flock to you. And the reality is, no, the very best value you'll get out of this medium is those close, intimate relationships with those most important stakeholders. Forget about the soapbox and the, you know, the mass broadcast. Reach through the screen and connect and impact people one-to-one. That's a wonderful opportunity.
You're so right, Roger. And we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for LinkedIn, because I met a series of Australian colleagues of yours and eventually we were introduced. So LinkedIn is a magical tool.
That's right.
The thrust of my book, We Need New Leaders, is that building a reputation can be very powerful for leaders from diverse identities, diverse backgrounds and underrepresented minorities. And you say that one of the motivations in your work is to help female leaders build online trust to bypass traditional barriers. How does that show up in your work and how are you helping female leaders to build trust?
Yeah, it's something I am particularly passionate about. And I think for me, it was really stark and confronting. And there's much broader issues around gender equity that we probably won't go into on the podcast, but obviously that context is there and a range of issues that, you know, from my perspective, as a man, yes, but as a brother and a son, and also as a father of two girls myself, you see the inequity day in, day out. And it's something that has personally fired me up and frustrated me for many years now. Why that's so applicable in this context, Charlotte, in terms of the online environment, you see these same, frustrations and systemic barriers and issues applying online. And what's been particularly interesting for me is that the digital environment can, in fact, present a bit of a workaround, if you will. It can present a way to bypass some of those traditional and systemic barriers. And my own experience, and I can only talk to my own experience here, my experience has been that when I work with female leaders in particular, they seem to be much more open to the very attributes that work most effectively online. As you're talking about listening, talking about collaboration and the idea of question asking and learning in a public forum rather than turning up online and feeling you've got all the answers ready to go. So these attributes might be more common or more commonly shared among female leaders, and that may be why they then are much more effective online. We did some research a couple of years ago looking at the ASX 200. So for those who aren't familiar, that's, you know, the Australian Stock Exchange and the 200 largest companies within our stock exchange. What was really interesting about that, female leaders only made up 9%, I think it was, at that time a couple of years ago, of the CEOs representing those organisations. But that same cohort of female leaders greatly outperformed their male counterparts in terms of their audience engagement, in terms of their frequency and visibility online, turning up and having those conversations with stakeholders. And it's something that I think has consistently turned up again and again in my journey. And so it excites me because I think that if there are traditional barriers holding you back, well, what a wonderful place to be able to find, to be able to access, to be able to build allies and colleagues and friends right around the globe who can help you on your journey professionally. And particularly if there are those barriers in the physical world, what a wonderful opportunity to create those relationships online and leapfrog some of the rubbish that exists offline. Now That all being said, Charlotte, I don't want to try and paint this picture of utopia. I've worked with plenty of female leaders, and on the podcast that I run, Your Digital Reputation, I do remember having a chat with a CEO currently, but from her former role, and someone from the eSafety Commission here in Australia. And we talked about the time that she was unfairly targeted, and there were several instances, but unfairly targeted and trolled based on simply her gender, nothing to do with anything else other than her gender. And some of the things that she went through were quite horrific and confronting. What I loved about her story, and her name's Amanda, what I loved about Amanda and what she did, she didn't see it as something that was going to stop her and hold her back. She actually saw it as an opportunity to speak up, to shed light on this issue, and to give other people who might be suffering in silence from this, you know, completely unwarranted sort of behavior, to give them some confidence and encouragement that they weren't alone. And the response that she had was overwhelming. And I know that she's continued to be visible and active online and continues to champion the cause. And she's got some wonderful women and men around her who give her that encouragement. So, yeah, it's something that I'm particularly passionate about. The data tells us there's wonderful opportunities there for women, but also for other, you know, minority groups or people from diverse backgrounds who don't fit the standard mold in certain roles and responsibilities. There's a huge opportunity there because at the end of the day, it is about forming those networks, those relationships, as you said, getting access to wonderful people, values-aligned people, and doing great work together.
I love that story of Amanda and that honesty and showing up for other women in terms of the problem of trolling, which is very real for women and possibly part of the reason why some women are reluctant. But I do think that LinkedIn usually, because it's not an anonymous platform, is usually one of the safer digital platforms for women. And I certainly feel very safe on LinkedIn. I've only had one situation of a troll turning up and I showed him the door very firmly.
I'm pleased to hear that. But, and look, the reality is LinkedIn is a very safe, or certainly a safer environment. But the reality is that, unfortunately, where there is humanity, there will always be problems. And so in any environment, you are going to have those bad eggs. And my attitude to that is know the system, know how it works, surround yourself with good people, and that knowledge and that empowerment is likely to minimize the likelihood of those things happening. I kid you not, just earlier today, I saw another post that someone had screenshotted from their private messages and shared publicly on LinkedIn for what is completely inappropriate behavior from a random male, put it that way. And he then showed up in the comments under that post. and tried to defend himself. Yeah, so this stuff does happen. I think what's important is know the risks, absolutely. But what I'd encourage people, and maybe where this conversation will go, Charlotte, what I'd encourage people to consider is you removing your voice from that domain or from that environment. In the case of Amanda and that podcast, removing your voice from that conversation certainly isn't empowering for you. And it's certainly not going to help you reach your own career goals and ambitions. So what's a safe way that you can participate in this environment? It is listening. It is finding that tribe, that network of allies, and it is continuing to surround yourself with those good people. So when the bad eggs do sometimes come, they're much more easily to weed out and remove.
Yeah, and I love that you say that because, you know, we say to women, find your voice, and we say feel empowered and show up as yourselves. But if Amanda had removed herself from social media platforms based on the trolling, it sends such a negative message to other women. And one of the things that I'm starting to say is by showing up and owning your reputation and building that trust online and building a following, you're not only representing, but you're actually building a bridge for others to walk across. So you talked about your daughters, like the next little girl who wants to be a CEO sees the steps that need to be taken to get there. And that's so powerful.
I completely agree. And what's even more powerful about that is you don't know who's watching. So when we go right back to the start of our conversation, we talk about the difference between the physical and the digital, the amazing potential and opportunity of a digital reputation, curating that carefully, shaping your narrative, maintaining those key relationships that are going to help you on your way. That asset is infinitely scalable. Any person, anywhere, at any time across the globe can search and find out what they want about you. They can follow along on your journey. They may never even meet you. And yet, the example that you set, as you're saying, the role modeling that you do online has ripples far beyond your physical network and environment. So yes, if you do take that approach and you do have that attitude towards how you can use your digital reputation and how you can leave that legacy for others, know that digitally, that will scale so much further than the physical reputation ever could.
Lovely. So, Roger, let's talk about you. I'd like to know a little bit about your leadership journey. So you started out working at Sefiani Communication Group, which is a very large strategic communications firm in Australia, and now you run your own business. Talk us through that path.
Yeah, it's a fair journey. So, and Sefiani, yes, that's right. They are part of Clarity Group global network now. So they've got, I believe that some of the team were actually just over in Europe and the UK recently. So I started there very young and fortunately had a boss at the time, a managing director, Robin Sefiani, who had a very entrepreneurial spirit and was happy to give most things a crack. If it had merit, if it had, you know, some common sense behind it, she was happy to back you. And so I went to her one day and literally said, look, Robin, I'm really interested in this social media space. I can see what's happening personally, and I'm intrigued to see how things will play out professionally. And I see the alignment between what's happening in my own personal world and what we or how we advise clients professionally. And again, to her credit, she gave me the license and the opportunity to do that. So what was interesting, Charlotte, is off the back of that, one of the very first exercises we did as a team, and this is almost 20 odd years ago. In fact, it is 20 years ago. We did an exercise where we Googled every single person in the agency. And we pulled together what we found and we created a little presentation of our different characters in the office. And so sure enough, we found some really interesting things. And that's what led me to my story, which is the Roger Christie, who actually is was born in Steamboat, Colorado, and now lives in Hawaii and has started a thing called the THC Ministry, which is the Hawaiian Cannabis Ministry. And you can see how this is going. It's a very interesting story. And so that was actually the thing that really sparked my interest back in the Sefiani days to go, well, hang on. If someone's Googling me, and I'm hoping that they're not looking at Roger Christie in Sydney, Australia and going, you are this same character who lives and does some interesting stuff and has spent time in a federal prison over in the US. I'm hoping they work out their different characters. But in some people's cases, those digital twins are far more closely aligned and far more confusing for people who might be doing their research. And so if that applied to me, how might it apply to all our professional clients? And so that's what then set me on this really interesting journey over the course of 10, 15 years to work out, well, what is the opportunity here? What is the power of having a digital reputation and taking that kind of B2B, more professional services-oriented communications background? Reputation sat at the core of everything that we did. So as I brought that into the social media world, they were the building blocks of Propel and what we know of it today, in that people need to take advantage or at least harness that asset that they have, knowing that people are using this information to make everyday decisions about you. Best you put your best foot forward rather than leave it for someone else to fill the space.
So don't be passive.
Don't be passive. Don't be passive. Yeah. My encouragement to anyone is, it is far more risky to be silent. It is far more risky to opt out. It's almost like, and actually I do remember this conversation I had with a client several years ago now, and they said to me, as part of the kind of briefing and strategy development phase, they said, we opted out of conversations previously. We can't just let ourselves back in when we want to. And that framing, that kind of perspective, very mature, but also very compelling and incisive. And so for leaders who might say, well, I don't want to do it today, thank you very much, it takes up too much time, or whatever it might be, know that you can't just invite yourself back in when it suits you. Mm-hmm. Know that you need to earn trust in the digital age, in the same way that we needed to earn trust prior to the internet. But this is an asset that scales far more widely, and where the effects are felt far more widely than they have been for leadership previously.
So you're running Propel, which is a online reputation advisory firm, and you run it with your wife, Gemma. And I'm very interested to understand how that works in a marriage and how the two of you go about running your business together and making those important leadership decisions.
Yeah, when it comes up, it's a thing that surprises a lot of people. When they say, how do you do that? How do you share all these domains of life? So yes, we, obviously a married couple, we work together, we parent together, we do everything together. And people might think, goodness, do you sit on one another's or in one another's shadows during the day? I think why it works, Charlotte, is the fact that we're both very different people. And I've got a great amount of respect for Jem and her, the way she sees the world and the value that she brings to our business. But it wasn't by design. It absolutely wasn't. It wasn't something that we said, 15 years ago, this is what we're going to do. It was something that we realized there was alignment there. And I've certainly come to appreciate her skill set and what she adds to the business with ideas and in ways that I didn't even conceive of back in the early days of Propel. So how we work? Funnily enough, we don't have too much day-to-day interaction. We try to give one another that space. I mean, her skill set is very much around the creative strategy, strategic thinking, innovation, and IP side of Propel and what we do. She's constantly challenging the ideas that are out there in market and coming to me and saying, what do you think about this? Could we do it this way? And if she's given a blank canvas, can create some wonderful things. Me, on the other hand, I'm almost more at the coalface, Charlotte. I'm there having those conversations day to day. I love the interaction, the problem solving, working with people through challenging situations, trying to remain calm through those challenging situations. That's more my wheelhouse. And so I think the way it works is that, yes, we've both got a communications background, and yes, we both understand one another's, domains of expertise, but it works because we have complementary skills rather than cannibalistic skills.
And it sounds like you have a lot of respect for each other's expertise, which is so important.
Yeah, and it's something that I think, that cuts across all domains. So, again, this was not by design, but certainly in the way we parent our children as well and family life, I'm fully aware of the skills that she has and the skills she doesn't have, and likewise the same for me. We know what our strengths and weaknesses are, and we try to play to them.
Yeah. Lovely. Roger, talk to me a little bit about reinvention, because you were an employee and now you're an entrepreneur. And I'm starting to be very intrigued by what are the qualities that allow people to reinvent themselves. What do you think it is about you and maybe Gemma as well that have allowed you to reinvent yourselves in this way?
It's a really good question, Charlotte. And I think if I'm honest about our own journey and whether this applies to the people listening or not, hopefully there's some principles in there that do apply. The reason why we reinvented ourselves and the reason why I've gone from that kind of, going from Cefiani to Ogilvy even, having that multinational, that global agency experience, to then running what was essentially an organization from my backyard in our little home in Sydney at the time. So the reason for that was actually bigger drivers. We've never been, I'd call myself an accidental entrepreneur. There was never a design, a plan that said this is the way it needs to be. When I was working at Ogilvy, so you've heard the Sefiani story. When I was working at Ogilvy, I saw a real opportunity there to do what I called at the time B2B social media, more focused on the kind of professional relationships and influence side of things, not mass consumer campaigns that social media was largely used for at the time. And so the thing that drove Propel, though, was actually the fact that we were getting married and the fact that at that time I wanted to have the headspace and the capacity to make sure that I was hitting what I thought would be and still do think the most important day of my life with the energy and the focus that that would make that or you know, do it credit, do it justice. And so that was a team discussion between Jem and I to make the decision to leave and to maybe somewhat foolishly start a business 3 months before getting married. But the idea at the time was always, you know, we want to set ourselves up for the future. We want to have time for one another. So if this goes well, great. I'll come back and keep working in Propel. If it doesn't go well, fabulous. We've had a 3 month experiment and I can come back and find full time work and continue that journey. So the source of that reinvention and the message that I would share with other people is knowing your drivers, knowing your motivations. And when you do know that, you give anything a crack with real conviction. So, and again, how does this then apply to the online world? I talked earlier about that idea of goals, audiences, and passions. And obviously this sits in that passion space. If you're incredibly passionate about things, you will naturally seek out opportunities to talk about it. You will naturally seek out people that you want to build relationships with. And so for me, that idea of reinvention, that would be my encouragement to people. Find the things that you're passionate about. Ideally, find things that have some kind of commercial side to them as well that are going to help you in your own career. But find those things that you're passionate about and you'll be surprised. The time isn't frustrating. The time isn't hard. You're willing to spend that time. You're willing to invest more and you're willing to try and problem solve things as Jem and I are because we're motivated to do the work that we do. It's not a chore.
I can really see that a key tenet of reinvention is purpose. Mm. And I can see that there's a very strong match to reputation, that finding your why and why you're doing things. How do you think about your own reputation?
I'd like to think that everything that I do in all domains of life reflects the reputation that I have built, but also the reputation that hopefully has the biggest positive impact on people. So I don't, and I know we talk about digital reputation and we talk about the difference between that and your physical, your offline reputation. I certainly, having gone on this journey for now, you know, the best part of two decades, I don't see them as separate. I see your reputation as one asset. I just simply see the digital side of it as often the thing that's forgotten by most people or maybe not given the same level of attention. So for me, how I see my own reputation is the same way you would handle situations in, you know, behind closed doors is ideally the same way you would want to handle things in the public domain. And what that means is when you're having a discussion with someone on social media in the comments, and I had this not too long ago with someone who was on a very opposite side of the coin to my own perspective. Does that mean that I'm going to shout and yell and get angry at someone like that? Or does it mean that there's an opportunity actually to understand more about this person and why they see the world they do, whether I agree or not? And I hope that in those interactions, whether online or offline, you're role modeling good examples. And that for me is the important thing, because if I'm one person offline and one person online, that's where there's credibility erosion. That's where there's confusion and conjecture. And suddenly the whole charade falls down. So it's not about leaders being some sort of person online and some sort of person offline. We've got to recognize that these domains fully overlap today. And so it's just about turning up as yourself. It's just about being very purposeful, as you said, being very clear on who you are and what you stand for. What is your purpose? What is your motivation? What are you convicted by? And then turning up and being that person online as you would be offline. And then I tell you what, it becomes a whole heap easier because there's no masks, there's no facades, there's no pretending, there's no white lies. You are literally just turning up and living every day. And that's something that I try to live by, certainly, and I'm, you know, happy to be called out if I'm not. But it's something that I try to live by, and it's also something that I believe I can counsel other leaders on, the importance of the fact that these domains are overlapping today. So we just need to turn up as ourselves and be true to ourselves.
It's so powerful, and it gives a lot of freedom to the folks who I talk to, which is people from diverse identities, diverse backgrounds, underrepresented minorities. It's opening the door. You know, the masking needs to stop. You don't need to do that anymore. To show up as yourself is a very, very powerful message. So my personal passion is to change leadership. And in order to change leadership, we have to change the archetype of leadership. And it's part of our neuroscience. We have this archetype in the back of our heads that leadership is loud, potentially male, it's big energy, it owns a room, it's a navy suit, maybe it's a red tie. And we tend to prioritize confidence over competence. And my mission really is to change that. With all the leaders that you've worked with, Roger, over the years, what have you seen, and how can we help to collectively and individually start to shift that archetype?
It's a great question. And I think for me, leadership, first and foremost, Charlotte, is an everyday decision for everyone. It's not necessarily, I mean, you give that archetype of the blue suit and the red tie, you know, heaven help us if that's still the case. But I think it's about anyone and everyone can lead in any given circumstance. It's about making decisions that are likely to lead to positive change and impact and influence for other people. So if we use that as the starting point, what is so wonderful about this online world, the digital world that we live in, it gives us the capacity to access things that we otherwise couldn't. We don't need to sit and listen to the same echo chamber. We don't need to be told by traditional sources of authority and power that this is the way it should be. We can seek out people based on values alignment. It's very easy to, and I'll give a very practical example of this. If you know, and let's take your example here, Charlotte, if that's what you're passionate about, if you know just one person who represents all those wonderful qualities and attributes about changing the archetype of leadership, if you know just one person and you go find that person online, invariably, by scratching beneath the surface, either looking at reactions or looking at comments on those people's posts, you're going to find a whole heap of new people who are equally values aligned to you. Suddenly, you just uncovered a whole heap of new allies and friends and people that you're going to learn from. And I think what's powerful about that, I talked about this idea of tribe earlier, or referenced that idea of tribe. That's where you're going to find people who share your view on the world, not for the purposes of sticking the blinkers on and not inviting any other commoner ideas in, but for the purposes of learning and bouncing off one another and creating or co-creating better futures. So I really do think that there's a wonderful opportunity for anyone with any background at any stage of their career, even as a graduate or an intern, who is thinking about what they should do in their own career. Start now. Start building your own digital reputation. Start being very intentional about the way you turn up online and the company that you keep online. Don't be afraid to reach out to people who have got many more years of experience than you. If you're passionate about something, that will shine through. Do it. Use the opportunity, use the tools and infrastructure that you've got at your disposal to make those steps today. And sure enough, what we'll see, Charlotte, we won't see these kind of isolated examples of authority and power. We won't see these platforms that we're all forced to go through or to listen to. We will start to see that fragmentation of, or breakdown, deconstruction of those traditional hierarchies. And we will start to see a much more diverse cohort of leaders and people who set the example for others who are like them and others who want to aspire to or see themselves as being that person in the future. And for me, that's a much more exciting version of leadership than having one generic archetype.
Such a powerful answer. And what I take from it is, and it's something I say as well, by showing up as yourself, by finding your tribe, we are actually changing society. We are actually breaking down those old traditional models. And how much power is that for one single person sitting alone at their desk somewhere in the world, that you can actually make a change by showing up as yourself? So powerful. Thank you. Love that.
And just with that, Charlotte, if anyone's heard that and thought, yes, that is powerful, but oh my goodness, how am I going to reach and influence, 8 billion people? That sounds like a hard task. The point, the kind of, add on to what you've just said there and what we've been talking about, start small. It's not about trying to have this mass platform. It's actually about, when you talk about tribe, the tribe isn't the global population here. Our tribe are the people who see the world the way we do, who are values aligned, who are on that same mission. So find that, even if it's a small cohort of people, and focus your attention on them. And as you say, that will create real positive change over time.
Lovely. Now we get to the questions I always ask. Give us a book recommendation.
So I first confession is that I'm not a massive bookworm, but I have read more intentionally recently. At the moment, I'm actually reading Michelle Obama's Becoming book, which I just personally find quite fascinating because I love the title. You know, the sentiment that I'm reading, fabulous, but I love that idea of becoming, and it's something that I, you know, talk about with our kids as well. It's not necessarily who you are today, it's who you want to be. So that's, I haven't finished it, so I can't recommend it just yet. But one book that I would recommend is very different. It's called The Courage to be Disliked. And there's another book, a companion book called The Courage to be Happy, and I've read both of them. I would encourage, if you're thinking about this idea of, you know, purpose and identity and who you are and the impact you can have on the world, for me, The Courage to be Disliked is just a fabulous read because it's a, I don't know if you've come across it, Charlotte, but it's essentially a conversation between an aging philosopher and a young student who wants to challenge him on a range of different ideas. And there's some concepts in there. It won't all resonate with people, but there are some concepts in there that are very powerful about how and why you live your life the way you do. So would wholeheartedly recommend it to you and to everyone listening.
Thank you for that. So as I've said, my mission is to help leaders from diverse backgrounds and diverse identities and thinking very much about emerging leaders as they're stepping potentially into their first leadership role. From your experience, what three tips would you give them as they first become leaders?
So we've talked about it a lot already in our chat, but the first and most important thing for me is purpose. And so those ideas of goals, audiences, and passions that we talked about before, I have a resource that I use with all our clients called the Purpose Pyramid. If people hear this and they're interested, please by all means reach out. I'm more than happy to share the framework. It's one of those things that you can probably spend half an hour and get, you know, what I'd say is years of value down the track if you get it right. So it's not a huge investment up front. But the importance of getting that right, if you can be clear on your purpose, particularly as you step into a leadership role or particularly as you step into a, you know, a new level of visibility and impact and influence, if you can be so clear on your purpose, one, it's going to give you a much sharper focus and it's going to avoid a lot of time wastage. Two, it's going to help you identify who those people are that matter and people you need to bring on your journey. And three, it will give you that conviction, that motivation that we've talked about that's going to fire you up and compel you to do things. So my encouragement to people would be step one, sit down and do, not if, even if it's not our purpose pyramid, be clear on your purpose and use that to inform your next steps. The second thing is then put it into practice. So if you're clear on your purpose, the next thing I would love everyone to do, put it into practice online. Go and find those people. Access those you never could have accessed before. Learn from their ideas, as per the CEO example that I gave earlier in our chat. Think about listening first, then building that confidence and familiarity with the online audiences, that online tribe, and then contribute the value in the way that is appropriate to you. And then the final step, and this is really important, as you said, and I agree with you, we perhaps get things around the wrong way. We think the first time we step out online or when we step into a new leadership position, people want to hear from us. And of course they do. And we need to talk. But if we've listened, if we've built that understanding, if we've built that connection with audiences, then the third step is to then share your own views with the world. So I'd encourage everyone listening today, do that purpose pyramid, get familiar with your key audiences and passions, and then go out there and share your story with the world because it does have an impact.
Such a set of powerful steps. Thank you so much, Roger. Our last question. We live in a world that isn't always easy. Things are sometimes quite heavy. What brings you joy?
What brings me joy personally, and at the same time, I'll be completely transparent, a lot of frustration is my family, Charlotte. So there are times when we've just gone back to school here in Australia and, you know, we have wonderful times together. But of course, there's those day-to-day challenges. But I get real joy from, you know, seeing my wife and my kids doing what they do well and seeing them happy. That's incredibly encouraging. And I think professionally, what gives me joy is seeing that same kind of attribute in the clients that I work with. So seeing a leader who might, for whatever reason, have doubts, or seeing someone who is fearful of what might happen if they do share their perspective out in the big wide world. And what's really encouraging is then giving them the tools and the confidence and the support so that they're able to go out there and do that and just watching the impact of what they have to say. So whether it's personally or whether it's professionally, I get great joy from being there and seeing other people thrive and starting to believe in themselves and the impact they can have. That's incredibly rewarding.
Well, what a lovely answer and what a lovely conversation with a mission-driven, purpose-led leader. Roger Christie, thank you for joining me on Speech Bubbles. If you enjoyed this episode, please do follow Speech Bubbles to get new episodes as they land on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Please tell all your friends. And if you're interested in the ideas in this podcast around reputation, leadership, and diversity, you'll probably enjoy my book, We Need New Leaders, which is available online and in all good bookstores. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.